17 after 8, and a arrest warrant has been issued overnight for the Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. The International Criminal Court has also issued warrants for two of Gaddafi's top aides, including one of his sons, accusing them of crimes against humanity during the country's four-month-long civil uprising. The announcement of the warrants has been greeted by celebratory gunfire on the streets of Benghazi, which has become the rebels' stronghold. On the international scene, of course, much of the focus remains on Afghanistan. 27 Australians have been killed in the war there. The United States recently announced that 10,000 troops will be withdrawn by the end of the year. Another 20,000 will be withdrawn by the end of next year. There are currently about 100,000 Americans in Afghanistan. In the wake of the announcement, Australia says it will be staying the course. The Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, says our forces there are making progress. But a Lowy Institute poll released yesterday shows Australians don't share that view. 59% of those surveyed are opposed to Australia's continued military involvement in Afghanistan. Afghanistan, of course, just one of many areas of conflict around the world at the moment. And at the moment, an American expert on many of them is in Australia. His name is Dr. Michael Rubin. He is the resident scholar with the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research. His research areas include Arab democracy, domestic politics in Iran, Iraq and Turkey, diplomacy towards rogue states, Afghanistan, the Middle East, terrorism. In addition to his work at the American Enterprise Institute, Michael Rubin also travels to military bases across the United States and Europe, speaking to senior Army and Marine officers as they prepare to deploy to Iraq and Afghanistan. He's brought to Australia, been brought to Australia as a guest of the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council. Dr. Rubin is on the line. Dr. Michael Rubin, good morning.
Good morning, Alan.
Thank you for your time. What do you make of the news from Libya today about Gaddafi?
I'm mixed. I don't think that the ICC indictment is really all that good, although it really shows the dirty underside of international law. Mm. What we're basically signaling to Gaddafi now is that he has to fight to the death, that we can't hope for him to leave. Now, it's all well and good to feel self-righteous about international justice, but we really need to ask the question whether a symbolic indictment is really worth potentially the lives of several thousand more Libyans.
Good on you. I mean, does anyone know why we went there, what end we were seeking when we got there, and how long we were prepared to stay in order to secure this phantom end?
Well, President Obama talked about a humanitarian crisis, and so did NATO. Now, I see that, but I also see a national security crisis. If Benghazi had fallen, tens of thousands of armed Libyans would have flocked into Egypt, and that would have been set us down the path to instability.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When we talk about a humanitarian crisis, is there a humanitarian crisis in Zimbabwe? We don't seem to worry about them, do we?
No. I mean, there's a lot of hypocrisy when it comes to humanitarian crises. I have no problem getting involved on a humanitarian crisis, but through an American lens, I still want to fulfill a national security purpose as well.
Absolutely. And, of course, you talk about Egypt. I mean, we were mad keen, for whatever reason, to get rid of the regime, Mubarak, in Egypt. Now, of course, the Coptic Christians are all being murdered and the churches are being burnt down.
Well, indeed. But if we could even just go back to the humanitarian issue for a second, oftentimes people will rally around this for sheer idiocy. Take the Gaza flotilla that's about to set underway from Turkey. The fact of the matter is that Gazans have a higher life expectancy than Turkey, and they have lower infant mortality than Turkey. If Turkey and if the Europeans and if a lot of the chattering class really wanted to help on humanitarian grounds, they would do a U-turn and take that flotilla back to Turkey where the help is much more needed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just coming to Afghanistan. Now, you know, the legitimacy of that was we were fighting the war on terror. The Taliban was housing Osama bin Laden. That was the source of his power and strength. And so in we go. Now, of course, Osama bin Laden's dead. The Taliban most probably no longer have their bases in Afghanistan. The Taliban are on the side of Pakistan. I mean, should we be there?
The key question to me isn't whether we should be there or not, but can we afford to leave a vacuum in Afghanistan?
Yep.
The last time we did, the Taliban and terrorists, Al-Qaeda terrorists, reached out and struck Americans on 9/11, and certainly they also reached out and struck Australians in Bali. The fact of the matter is we should eventually withdraw from Australia, but not until something fills that vacuum so that we don't have Pakistani-based supported militants and Islamist extremists and terrorists filling that and using it as a safe haven.
But when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan in the late 70s, early 80s, of course, the Taliban were on our side. That was an unwinnable war. Now, is this winnable? And if it's not winnable, how do you negotiate a withdrawal?
I'll disagree with you. I'll quibble on one point. When the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, the Taliban were 4 or 5 years old. You can say what you will about the American CIA, but they're not in the habit of training kindergartners. We were working with those that became the Northern Alliance. The Pakistanis subsequently supported the Taliban. And the question we have to ask in terms of withdrawal is, do we want to subject Afghan women, for example, to having their noses cut off and so forth?
Yep.
What should we do? We need to spend just a couple more years building up that Afghan National Army so that they can monopolize the use of force within their own borders. We've also got to encourage other countries with a greater stake in Afghanistan not going south to get in there and fill that vacuum. And I'm specifically talking about India.
Yeah.
We should be quarantining Pakistan, not co-opting it. And the last point is, negotiating with the Taliban is sheer and utter idiocy.
Yeah.
We've done that before.
Yeah.
Between 1995 and the year 2000, the American government held more than 36 sessions with the Taliban, and they lied to us at each and every single one. The danger is that Afghans have never lost a war. You're right on that. They simply defect to the winning side, and so what we got to do is show momentum. And when we show momentum, it's amazing how the Taliban dry up.
Good. Well, then what do we make of Pakistan, both America, the West, the world? Who's going to pull them into line?
Well, the point is we can't always co-opt rogue regimes like Pakistan. Instead of trying to sell them, for example, predators to get them on our side, I would argue that we've got to pressure them and play hardball. If they don't behave, then we've got to threaten to sell the predators not to Pakistan, but to India.
You've been to Afghanistan. I was interested in the last point that you made about doing deals with the Taliban. Isn't that what President Karzai is looking at doing?
Well, that's exactly what he's looking at doing, but that's only because President Obama and the greater Western community has signaled to him that we're pulling out. We have this love affair with artificial timelines. Karzai wants to survive, and so what he will do is try to hitch his wagon to whomever he thinks will guarantee his survival. If the United States and Australia are no longer going to be there, he's going to make accommodations with people no matter how bad they are, because his interest front and center is his own pocketbook and his own position.
So you're saying that if America and Australia and those allies leave, he's in a deal with the Taliban for survival. Would the Taliban allow him to survive, or would things just return to what they were before the United States and Australia and the allies moved in? And if that's the case, what's been the point of the fighting and the deaths?
Well, you ask a great question. Karzai believes that he could stay in power. He's absolutely wrong on this. The Taliban, the Pakistanis would drop him like a hot potato. The fact of the matter is that we've made a mistake by backing a single person rather than trying to build a system. There's lots of good Afghans, lots of Afghans who aren't corrupt, lots of Afghans that want to build their country. We did make a mistake with Hamid Karzai. That said, that if we show that we are intent on staying, if we show that we are intent in having a victory, then we will see Afghans fall in line behind us. Remember, when President Bush announced the surge in Iraq, it was wildly unpopular, but when he got up and he announced it, he didn't give a timeline, and he talked victory.
That's
Obama's done the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. The timeline thing is a nonsense, and it's a recipe for indecision from everybody. Just a final thing here, though. If the US were to leave, and Obama seems to say that's the case, are outfits like Pakistan or Russia or Iran or China likely to move in to fill any vacuum? And what would that mean?
They would absolutely move in. We're engaged in a proxy war for influence, whether we realize it or not. They would fill the vacuum, and ultimately what it would do is put us at a strategic disadvantage and guarantee that we would have to fight there again.
Amazing. Gee, it's good to talk to you. Could talk to you for hours.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your scholarship.
Thank you.
Really, Dr. Michael Rubin. Very impressive. You see, that's the point he's making. If America and the Allies leave, then the Pakistans and the Russians and the Iranians and the Chinese would move in at the invitation of Karzai to fill the vacuum. And that, of course, would change the whole power balance in that region. It's a very complicated issue, Afghanistan. 27 after 8.